Hey guys, the following podcast is a Lady Gang Network and Podcast One production, which means it's going to be awesome.
Welcome to The Stacks, a podcast about books and the people who read them. I am your host, Tracy Thomas, and today we are joined again by Jenna Paris of the Mama Said podcast to discuss Crib Sheet by Emily Oster for The Stacks Book Club. There will be no spoilers today, so if you've not read the book, don't worry, you can listen and enjoy. Before we get to the episode, here's a little housekeeping. All right, here it is, your weekly reminder. Everything we talk about on today's episode can be found in the show notes. There is a link there that will take you to all the books discussed today, as well as the social media accounts for The Stacks and our guests. Plus, if you shop through the links on Amazon, you're helping to keep The Stacks free. If you're looking for an amazing book recommendation, send us an email to askingthestacks@gmail.com. Myself and my guest will read it on air, discuss it, and then give you a personalized book recommendation or five. So email askingthestacks@gmail.com with your name, what you're looking for, and maybe a few titles you've loved or hated. If you like The Stacks and want to support the work we're doing, here are a few easy ways you can help. First of all, join us over on Patreon. That's a website where you support the work we're doing and earn perks for yourself. We've got a virtual book club, we got inside access to the show, and we have an amazing community of other readers who love the podcast. So head over to patreon.com/thestacks to join in. Another way to support the show is to support our sponsors like Audible. They are your go-to destination for all things audiobooks. Plus, if you listen to this show, you do get a free 30-day trial and a free audiobook download. So go to audibletrial.com/thestacks. The last thing you can do to help the show is definitely the easiest. Subscribe to The Stacks wherever you get your podcasts. Leave us a rating and a review and tell your friends and family about the show. It goes a really long way to helping us reach new audiences. All right, now it's time for The Stacks Book Club conversation of Emily Oster's book, Crib Sheet. All right, you guys, we're back today with Jenna Paris from the Mama Said podcast. Jenna, welcome back.
Hi, thanks for having me again.
So excited. Okay, we're talking about Crib Sheet by Emily Oster. It's a data-driven guide to better, more relaxed parenting from birth to preschool. It's a parenting book. We've never done a parenting book on the show because... what do I know about parenting?
Well, now you do.
Well, not yet. When you guys are listening to this, I'll be like 2 weeks into being a parent. So
it's a lot. A long 2 weeks.
I'll have learned a lot, I guess, by then. But I'll have a lot more
crash
to go.
Course.
This book, so basically, we should say Emily Oster she's an economist.
Oh yes,
right, economist.
Yes.
And so she basically, when she got pregnant, she was like, I didn't know what advice to take or listen to or whatever. And so I started looking at all these different studies. And then she wrote her first book, which is called Expecting Better.
Mm-hmm.
And then once she had a kid, two kids, she then went back and took a bunch of studies about parenting and made Crib Sheet. So she goes through and she'll look at blind studies or randomized trials or all these different types of studies about all the different things that are come up in parenting, and she talks about them throughout this book.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of a rundown for what it is. And it's things like circumcision and co-sleeping and nanny versus daycare and being a stay-at-home parent versus being a stay-at-work parent is what the kid calls it in the book. So we always start here. What did you think of the book?
Oh my gosh. I love it, and I will forever tell people to read this as their manual for if they ask me questions. I'm just going to say, go read this book. It is so spot on for what moms ask about when they're curious about everything. I mean, it touches on every single important topic from the second your kid's born or before until, you know, preschool, until what school, what type of school, Reggio Emilio, it is such a well-written book. And I say that because it's not complicated.
Right.
It's like, she also has like these cliff notes at the end. So it's like basically what you take from this chapter is here's the research I found. This is good. This is not good. This is good. Here's the bottom line. She gives bottom lines. And that's like what moms need when they're pregnant and they're frantic and they're nervous. They just want the bottom line. Like, I want to trust someone to have done the research for me and just give me that bottom line. Is this good or is this not good?
Right. Right. And I think like I really like this book because I am super anxious about becoming a parent, and becoming a first time parent to two people at once is also really terrifying. Yeah. And I felt like this book gave me options again.
Yes.
Like I felt like she really empowered me to actually make decisions as opposed to feel like I'm drowning in the breastfeeding debate.
Right.
And like it really doesn't need to be that complicated.
Right.
And she really kind of demystified things.
Yeah.
And she goes through and she does all the work of reading through the studies.
Yes. Like, thank you very much.
Yeah. Like, I appreciate you doing the work.
Yeah.
I don't know if, even if I had read all the same studies, if I would even know how to understand them in the same way. And I felt like the wrap up at the end of each chapter was really helpful. And she really like, because the wrap up at the end of each chapter isn't always, this is what you should do.
Yeah.
And basically the whole book, she says to you, like, you need to weigh the costs and the benefits.
Yeah.
And both things.
Yeah. But I also like how she brought in her own personal experience.
Totally.
And it's funny because I really related to everything she said. Like, I was like, oh my God, she's me. Like, I basically, because I went through all this, like, I already went through the, what to give the baby, the vaccine when they're born and da 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 da. And, I was like, if I related so much to her personal choices.
Right.
Yeah,
and she does share them in addition to, but she does it in a way that's not like what I did was right, but it's like, this is what was right for me
exactly.
at this time. And like, she has two kids also like you.
Yeah.
And so her first child is a girl, and her second child, I believe, is the boy.
Yep.
But she talks about how things were different and
how
she made different decisions based on what was the right for them.
Like the sleep training.
Right,
and the,
exactly. So I really like that.
Yeah.
Because I think also with parenting, at least for me, and I don't know if you can speak to this when you were pregnant or early on, that we think so much about how we're going to be hurting our kids by making these decisions.
Yeah.
And it was a reminder of how much good also can come from the decisions when you start to look at the benefits, right?
Yes.
And I think that I'm so focused on the costs of like, if I don't do this right, this is going to ruin my child. And she's like, okay, maybe, but like actually,
it's
actually not that much risk. And there's actually a lot of benefit for not doing it or doing it or whatever it is.
Exactly. Like when she was saying like stay at home versus not stay at home, she was like, your kid's not going to not be attached to you. Like just because you go to work, like you're going to have the same attachment. Like it's okay. Like look, like go to work, enjoy your life as a working mom.
And that like there's really no difference after the age of five.
Right.
Between like there might be a small advantage between like three and I think it was like between three and five for kids who have one full-time parent.
Yes,
and one part-time
yes, yes,
parent.
Yes.
But
yeah.
By the time they're seven, it's like basically completely gone.
Yes.
Which is makes such a huge difference when you start to think like you're so stressed about is this going to ruin my kid? Is my kid going to be dumb?
Will my kid
get into Harvard? And she's like, by the time they're five, nobody even knows.
So funny. This is like kind of off topic, but a lot of people have always said to me like when my kids are young, they'll never remember. It's okay. Like that's the advice they gave me. Like you're going to go out to dinner when they're 6 weeks old. Why do you feel guilty? They'll never remember. It's like,
that's how I feel. Yeah. So we're currently recording in an apartment that's not my home. And my home is being renovated and I've been out of my house and I felt, and I've been, you know, stressed about a million things in addition to the fact that I'm not in my house. But the one thing that has not stressed me out at all is people were like, well, what if they come early before you're in your house? I'm like, well, they're not going to remember.
Yeah, exactly.
I might be miserable.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like,
what's it to them?
They're also sleeping in my room the first few months anyways. So what difference does it make if I'm in a one bedroom apartment or if I'm in my home?
Yeah.
So like, that's like the one thing that I'm like, they're not going to remember.
I know. That's one thing I found really interesting. The study she showed, she asked, I believe it was a doctor who co-sleeped because the doctor was just my daughter just doesn't sleep. So I like that honesty because, you know, people are going to co-sleep. And even though people say it's so dangerous,
like to see the difference. We have some friends, my husband friends, they're two doctors and they co-slept their daughter.
Yeah.
I mean, their daughter still sleeps in their room. Both of them. Now they have a second kid and the first one's three.
God. Yeah.
And so I feel like let that be a lesson.
Yes. But, it could backfire at some point.
But the kids are fine. I mean,
of course. They're probably very cozy and fine.
Yeah. I slept in my parents' bed till I was in middle school.
Yeah. Like we all did.
Yeah. I would get out of, my mom would have to lay with me in my bed till I fell asleep. Then when I would fall asleep, she would wake up and try to get out of bed. And I would be like, where are you going?
Yeah.
Then she'd get back in bed. Eventually she would finally leave and go back in her bed. And then when I would wake up, whenever I woke up in the middle of the night,
you
would
go in their bed. Yeah.
Until I was in middle school.
Yeah.
I still, when my husband, if he gets out of bed to go pee,
yeah,
I wake up. I'm like, hey, is everything okay?
Yeah, me too. I do that too. And I was like very attached to my parents and my, like, sleeping in my mom's bed. And yeah, it's also there's a strict approach to baby sleeping, but there's also like, you have to kind of just be
right.
Like, kind of
well, right.
Okay,
like,
about it.
I feel like I might be slightly more in the Jamie camp because I know that how much sleep means to me and babies.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm like, I got to go hard in the paint on the sleep thing because if I get lax, I'm going to be the one who suffers more than anybody else.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, my kids were sleep trained both at 4 months.
Oh, they were?
Oh.
I thought, because I on the podcast, you said, like, I'm really good at sleep training other people's kids, but not my own kids.
Well, because my son just, like, woke, like, he was born and he never shut his eyes. So, it was very hard for me to do it. And I felt really guilty. I had to physically, like, remove myself from the house. I couldn't hear him cry. My husband did it, but we did it.
Oh, yeah. I see. Okay,
yeah.
Good. Because I'm going hard in the paint on sleep training.
Yeah. I mean, 4 months hit and for both. And with my daughter, it wasn't as hard, obviously, because I was like, he survived. He's alive after sleep training. So, like, my daughter will be too.
Well, one of the things she says in this book is that the anti-cry it out community is that research came from Romanian orphanages.
Right. That article, by the way, has been circling forever. Like, I remember seeing that article a couple years ago and being like, oh my God, that's so sad. And it comes up all the time.
Right.
And then on social media, people repost it like it's a new thing.
Right.
And it was so interesting to hear her talk about it. I was like, oh my God, like, yes, they've been neglected for months and months and months and months. You are not neglecting your child for 3 nights. Like, you're just like, you're still there every single morning and they wake up saying hi.
Right. I thought that was so interesting because I've heard like the anti-cry it out thing, but I never read the article because why would I read an article crying it out? But then hearing her talk about it and being like, this came from a 1974 Romanian orphanage. And I'm like,
yeah.
That makes more sense.
And it made me feel so much better.
Yeah.
Because, like, I read that article. It, like, came out again and people were reposting it during the time, I think, when I was about to sleep train Daisy. And for a second, it made me feel like a shitty mom. And then I was like, wait, never mind.
Wait.
I need to sleep.
That's it. I mean, that to me is like, because she does talk about in the book a lot, like, it's not just what's good for the baby, but it's what's good for the parents.
It's good for everyone. Sleep training, I'm a big advocate. I mean, we always talk about our sleep and mommy me guru, this woman, Jill Spivak, who you should like definitely take her classes.
Okay.
And I'll introduce you to her. But she's like the sleep person in Los Angeles. I mean, if it wasn't for her, like, I don't even know how I'd be alive. She basically, her mommy me classes are every single chapter of this book. It's incredible. But yeah, like, sleep training. I mean, I remember after I sleep trained my son, like, that week he had like 20 new words because he was sleeping. Yes. Like, they have like cognitive bursts all of a sudden because everyone's sleeping and you're a better mom. Like, that's the most important thing. If you sleep, you are a better mom.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember I didn't sleep for 5 days straight when I had Milo because my delivery was like 2 days long. Mm-hmm. It was just like I was in labor, but it lasted forever. And then he was in the NICU and I was too nervous. So I didn't sleep literally for 5 days straight. And I started hallucinating. I was so tired.
Right.
Like, no sleep is no bueno.
Yeah. Not sleeping is really dangerous.
I couldn't drive.
Yeah. You can't do anything.
Yeah.
Like, how can you function? I mean, I'm like a casual eight hours of sleep a night person. So
yeah.
I know that this adjustment is going to be really hard on me and I'm going to be sleeping like 5 hours and thinking
Like, remember, like, at 4 months, you will be sleeping 8 hours again.
Oh, I sure
Isn't
will.
That crazy?
It's going to be great.
Like, if you just think about it like that, like, it's just like 4 months of like, just like,
get there.
Yeah, yeah. Powering through.
Totally. I'm eye on the prize already.
Yeah. And I also, like, when I was breastfeeding, like, I also like didn't mind waking up because it was kind of cozy.
Right.
Even though my back hurt. Yeah. It was still kind of cozy.
I hope it's cozy. It's just too.
I mean, I like that actually like might be easier to like put two instead of like one. Like, you just like dude.
Yeah. I don't know. Some people do back to back where they do one and then the other. And then some people do two at once. But I think I got to go two at once because I don't want to spend all that time.
No. Wait, oh my God.
That's like
no,
an hour
you
have.
If you can, if like your boobs will allow you to do two at once, like that's great.
Yeah.
And also, that's so amazing. Your boobs will be the same size. Mine, like I favored my left side. So my boob was like out to here and my right boob was like, hello.
Oh, because all your milk was going just to the left side.
Yeah. So that's going to be great to like have an equal like
distribution.
Well, we'll
if it doesn't work, if I can't do two at once, I think I'm, I don't know. We'll see. I'll pump.
You'll see.
I'll pump or whatever. I don't know. They make you go to like a lactation consultant. And I
know the best one, Linda Hanna. You
well,
should
they
just
make me do it at the hospital. They made me do it like at the hospital, like as a doctor's visit. She's like a registered nurse.
Oh, really?
And it was like a pre, you know, they like yeah. talk to you about it. And I'm sitting there and she's like, well, we'll see what happens. And I'm like, so why am I here? Like, it seems
that's
not helpful.
But
to
that's
do
why
before.
I didn't do that stuff. I took CPR, of course, but I didn't take the birthing classes because what if I had a different experience?
Right.
Like, that was just like one birthing class to say, like, here, everything's going to be perfect. You're going to deliver vaginally and bada bing, bada boom.
Yeah.
I just chose not to do that.
I'm not doing birthing class. I did a breastfeeding class.
Yeah.
I had a consultation with my lactation consultant.
From the hospital or like a private one?
Hospital.
Okay.
All the hospital. And then I did a like newborn class.
Yeah.
And I basically found all of them to be, and I did a maternity tour, and I found all of them to be pretty much useless to me.
Yeah.
I found particularly the lactation consultant to be the most useless because it was like, well, you don't know how these kids are going to feed. So why don't we have this conversation after the babies are born?
Lactation consultants at the hospital are notoriously not great.
Right. I just think
they're like, here you go, honey, figure it out and swaddle your baby. Bye bye.
Yeah.
You know,
like I just feel like it's like, why am I here at 28 weeks?
That's
like, I don't know.
That's why I'm saying like afterwards you go see like a specialist. Like I said, this one woman who's incredible, like she will come over and she will say, this isn't working for you. This isn't. Like she really like will literally tear, like just break down everything that's going wrong and everything that's going right with breastfeeding. And she'll make a plan for you. And
I love a plan.
Yeah, me too. I mean, that's like, I feel like plans are just, you need a plan with everything.
I love a plan.
Yeah.
I know the babies are not helpful for plans, but I need a game plan.
You will have a game. Yeah.
But that's just how I am.
You'll adjust your plan all the time.
Like I'm just one of those people.
I think she even talks about like having plans in her books. Yeah.
Some people aren't into plans and schedules and that whole thing. I am, and I'm better if I have one and it fails.
Of course, yeah.
Than I am if I go in without a plan.
Yes, yes.
Like some people can just be like, I'm going to wing it. We'll see what happens. Like, did
I? Right. I think for the first year, it's important to have a plan. Some sort of plan.
I'm flexible.
I'm a flexible planner.
Yeah, that's how I like to think of myself. I mean, I can also be very flexible when it comes to things that I'm fully in control of. But if it's something that I know like other people are going to be involved in.
Yeah, yeah. Like I remember like writing down like schedules all the time, being like, okay, like on Word, being like, okay, 6 o'clock is wake up. If they don't wake up at 6, like I'll let them sleep till 6:30. Literally, like my life was this book.
Right.
She even writes about it.
Yeah.
Like I was laughing last night because I reread things because I had to refresh my memory. And I was like, okay, so I am basically Emily in this book. Literally. Like from writing down the schedule, I don't know if you like vaccination is such an important chapter for me.
Well, I'm the wife of a doctor, so I'm very heavily team vaccine.
Yeah, me too. And I am not the wife of a doctor, and I'm heavy.
I mean, I think I would have been anyways, but because I know I've heard so many stories, and like I think that sometimes people forget that vaccines aren't actually for you or your child necessarily. Mm-hmm. It's for the greater good.
Yes.
And so it's something that you can do to be a good citizen of the world.
Yeah, it's like, let's not have an outbreak of something.
Right.
Yeah.
And some people are vulnerable. Like right now, as a pregnant woman, I'm really glad to everyone who's had a vaccine for anything because it's keeping you safe.
Yes, yeah.
You know, and then when I'm having two babies in the winter.
Yes.
And so everyone who's had a flu shot, like thank you.
Both of my babies were born in cold and flu season.
Right.
In like the worst ones ever.
Exactly. It's like January, of course. It's going to be a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I got my flu shot.
Of course.
Because
you have to.
I have to. And my husband is in the hospital every day. So he brings home stuff all the time.
Yeah.
And when my father was ill before he passed away, we started getting flu shots. And I've just always gotten them since
then. Yeah. It's respectful.
It's respectful of other people. So I'm definitely team vaccine because you know, even just the flu, like people die from the flu for real. Yes.
It's not a joke. And babies and older people, like they have no immune system, right. People. Like, please, like for the love of God, like get a flu shot. So like babies and older people, like, you know, don't get sick.
And if you feel like you're getting sick because of your flu shot, guess what? That means it's actually working.
Yeah, they give you a little bit of it. I never cared about that. I mean, I'm just like, good, give me a little flu, whatever.
But also, like, it's not the actual flu you're getting. It's your body responding to the antibodies.
Yes.
Talk to your doctor if you're confused what's going on. But it's okay.
Something really important in her book about vaccines is about spacing them out. I know a lot of my friends space them out. And if you read in her chapter, like I never knew, like I, first of all, like I don't really talk about it with my friends who all of my friends vaccinate, but the spacing out thing, like I was never articulate enough to talk about like why you shouldn't, but she describes it really well in this book. She's like, if you wait longer for some of these vaccines, you have a higher risk of getting some seizure thing I don't know. But there are very positive reasons. Yes, very positive reasons to do it on time.
Well, right. And people who are far smarter and have dedicated their lives to this work have put this schedule together, not to ruin you and your baby's life.
Right.
Like, because that is what they think is best for the greater good.
Yeah.
And they work in public health and they work in, you know, like, it's not like, it's not like I was like, here's a schedule. Like, go ahead. Like, someone dedicated, that people dedicate their life to infectious disease.
Yeah. Oh, and she also says, she was like, but I guess like if you are spacing it out, it's better than not getting vaccinated at all. So I guess that's fine. But like the best thing to do is just do it on time. Our pediatrician is so wonderful. And she, you know, when we were interviewing the pediatricians, she was like, we do it on a schedule. And if you're not into that schedule, then you can't come here because we want everyone to be the healthiest they can be. We don't want anyone waiting and giving our, you know, office the flu when they haven't gotten their flu shot yet because someone wants to space it out or their MMR vaccine. Because she was like, no, this is not an office for you.
Right. Well, that's smart.
And I mean, loved that. I really was like, ping. Yeah.
I think that one of the things that I've seen a lot in parenting, I talked about this book last week called Small Animals, and it's all about this woman.
Yeah.
And she talks about how—
Will that be my next book I read?
I think you might really like it. Mm-hmm. She talks a lot about how because we have children later in our lives now, people used to have kids at 20, 25, and so you hadn't figured out your life yet. You didn't have an established routine.
Right.
You hadn't gotten deep into your career necessarily. You didn't know what you didn't know. And so the kids became part of your life, and it was something that just was like kind of like, oh, I also have a kid, but I still have a life, and I'm still have goals. And because a lot of people are like, I want to wait until I get to this milestone to have a kid or whatever.
Oh, that's so interesting.
And so I feel like that's also true with like even little things like vaccines or with things like, you know, you wait this whole time, you hold your kids up, you're like, I'm going to wait to finally achieve this motherhood or fatherhood. And then you put so much stress on it.
Yeah.
Where it's like, it doesn't need to be that big of a deal.
Yeah. Is there ever a right time for anything?
Right. And like, you would never tell your surgeon if you needed a hip replacement.
Right.
Like, actually, I need you to space out my like, you'd just be like, okay, you're a hip surgeon. Like, do it. And of course, we all want what's best for our kids and our family and ourselves. But I think like, and this, some of this probably comes from knowing what my husband goes through at work a lot. But like, people are experts for a reason.
I always say that. Yeah.
And like, I said that when I was planning my wedding.
Yeah.
I said to, you know, the florist, they were like, what do you think? And I'm like, I don't know.
You tell me. You're the expert.
In season. I don't know what flowers are in season at the end of March.
Yeah.
Like, whatever's pretty and like, looks nice.
Like, I trust you, honey.
Yeah, I'm like, I like it to be beautiful.
Yeah, you know, my sister, she's great now. She had Hodgkin lymphoma twice.
Oh my gosh.
And so, like, our family has been through it. And, you know, talk about, like, compromised immune systems. I mean, she was quarantined. And when she got her, you know, stem cell transplant and all this stuff. So, like, I just feel like doctors, God bless them. Like, they saved my sister twice. Medicine saved my sister. And it just made me that much more grateful to have these doctors doing the research for us. And I trust them. And I really do. I know there are a lot of documentaries out there that say, like, you know, sometimes when you have cancer, like, you don't need to have chemo. And, you know, like, right. That's great if that worked for them.
Right. Of course.
But my sister needed, you know, the chemo and she needed the immunotherapy. And this is, you know, I trust doctors and I trust, and because of that, even just seeing her going into remission, it just, when I had kids, I was like, there's no, I'm listening to you. I'm picking a pediatrician that works
right.
for me. And I'm going to do whatever they tell me to do.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's totally. The bottom line.
And I think, like, just not that I think that we need this disclaimer, but I'm going to give it anyways just in case. We're both speaking from our experience.
100% and my experience.
If you have a different feeling about vaccinations or doctors or whatever it is, like, you're totally allowed to have that feeling and those Sorry. Thoughts and whatever. Yeah. And, like, if that's you, you should live in your truth and what you think is best. But obviously, Jen and I both clearly have personal experience with the medical industry and the medical, and, like, it's not perfect and all sorts of things.
Definitely,
and, like,
not.
Shit goes wrong. And I can tell you more than probably anybody, shit does go wrong.
Yeah.
And, like, I know that doctors make mistakes and all that sort of stuff, but that's where we're coming from. And I don't want to have to get in fights with anybody or
it shouldn't be
like
a
that.
Fight because honestly, if I, you know, spoke to someone that didn't vaccinate, I wouldn't hate them.
Right.
I would just disagree.
Right.
But I would still think they're an amazing human being if they are one. You know what I mean? Like, this is not like a fighting, like, I just wouldn't want them around my children. That's all.
That's the right. That's the truth.
And that's the truth. I mean, look, like, you can do whatever you want. Just, like, please be respectful to other kids and other people who have a compromised immune systems.
Totally.
Do what you want.
Right.
You know?
And I think that's even a bigger thing when we talk about what's going on in the world right now. It's like, you can do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you are a person, if you're an adult and you can make whatever decisions you want for yourself and your family. But I think that the thing that people forget often is that those actions have consequences.
Yes.
And I think that that ultimately is the most important thing that I've been thinking about a lot recently, given, like, the current political climate and just, like, cancel culture and, like, all this stuff.
Yeah.
And people get upset and how dare you cancel so-and-so for doing such and such.
It's right.
Like, well, okay. They're not actually canceled. No one's actually ever been truly canceled. Like, they all come back. They all do comedy specials again.
Yeah.
But I
know. Sometimes it's better for their career.
Yeah. It's like, I, as a consumer or as a parent or as a wife or whatever, I get the information. You do something. I have a response.
Yeah.
Like, that's how the world works.
Yeah.
You can then respond to my response.
Yeah.
You're allowed to.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, like, if you don't want to vaccinate your child, that's fine. But then I get to respond to that.
Of course.
And if you don't want to, you know, if you support X, Y, and Z, I get a response to that. And, like, I think that people think that free speech or whatever, freedom means that you can do whatever you want and nobody can say anything back. And, like,
No, it's the opposite.
That's not it.
Yeah.
You live your life, you pick the truth. But I'm going to respond.
Yeah.
I'm going to have a feeling, even if I don't respond to you.
Yes.
I probably don't want to respond to you because I don't, it's like, who needs the drama?
Right.
But, like, I'll have a feeling about it and I'm allowed that space. So
for
I think
sure.
like when we talk about these issues that come up in this book, I think that that's kind of the place that I'm coming from. It's like, you can choose to be a stay-at-home mom or you can be an at-work mom and I can have my own feelings about that. And that doesn't denigrate you in any way. That's just my response to your choices.
Exactly.
And it's not like, oh, I think you're a bad person for going to work or for staying home. It's just I'm filtering your experience through my experience.
Yes, exactly. Like, we're allowed to be vocal about it.
Yeah.
It's different than being judgy. We're not being judgy.
Right.
We're just being vocal about how we feel about it. And that's
totally.
Okay.
Totally. Okay. So I do want to talk about stay-at-home mom versus what the book calls a stay-at-work mom.
Yes, I love that. I know.
So cute, I know. Boy. It was like, oh, what does your mom do? And it's like, it was a stay-at-home mom. And he's like, oh, well, mine's a stay-at-work mom.
So cute.
Which I love.
Brilliant.
My mom went back to work when I was 3 months old.
Mm-hmm.
My mom's like,
what'd she do?
She was a mortgage broker.
Yeah.
And she's like all the only woman. And she was like the badass, like,
love
one, like the top of the company, like whatever. But I had a stay at home ish dad.
Okay.
So my
people don't usually have that scenario. And I like that. I want to hear more about it.
So my dad was older than my mom by a lot of years. So when I was born, my dad was 50.
Okay.
So he had worked. My parents owned some apartment buildings. At one point,
wait, where are you from, by the way?
Oakland.
Oh, cool. Yeah, Northern California. Okay.
At one point, my parents owned a donut shop, which, like, truly, I was not alive for this. And it is the one thing that I'm still mad at my parents about.
Oh, my God.
I was just talking to my mom the other day, or like a few weeks ago, and I was like, how did you guys get rid of the donut shop before I came?
Because that's so rude.
I love a donut.
That's the parenting fail. Mom fail.
Like, I'll never forgive you guys.
If you're listening, mom, she's listening. How could you do this?
How could you do this to me?
Just kidding. You're wonderful, mama.
But my dad had a million different jobs. And by the time I was born or I was a kid, he just managed the apartment buildings. But he took us to school. He picked us up. We would get snacks. Like, he did the laundry.
Did you ever feel different, like weird about that? Yeah, or did you ever think,
I didn't even know.
That's great.
My mom used to work Sundays because she used to go to open houses because she worked in real estate. And I guess the story she tells is one day she came home and I was like two or three and we were watching football with my dad. And she walked in the door and I was like, touchdown, mommy. Yeah. And she was like, I'm never going to an open house again. I need to be home on Sundays. Didn't work. Still love football.
By the way, that's so cute.
Yeah. So I feel like I had a mom who worked a ton, and I had a dad who was a stay-at-home parent, and it was, I mean, he was technically part-time because he was managing.
Yeah, but he was home more than your mother.
But he was there for drop-off and pick-up. Yes. And he drove carpool, and he, like, did lunch.
Yeah.
And then when we were, like, five, he's like, you pack your own lunch.
Yeah, oh my God.
Like, we were definitely—
He's like, daddy's done. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But so you made the choice to be a stay-at-home parent.
I totally did. Totally my choice.
Did you always want to do that?
I think so. Luckily we were in a position where we could.
Right.
And by could, barely. Like, we're still like, oh my God, budget, shit, right. Money. But we were able to live off of his salary. And we also had to, you know, keep in mind, and she talks about this also in the book. I swear to God, like, this book is brilliant. It's like everything you ever think about. You know, I wasn't making as much as my husband. So if I was making, you know, X amount of dollars and my nanny is like $50,000 a year, like, is it even worth it?
Right.
You know what I mean? I did work before, you know, I came back to LA and I worked. But I wasn't making a big enough salary to kind of be like, okay, I'm going to get a full-time nanny.
Right.
So not only did I not want to go back personally, but I don't think financially it would have been a smart idea anyway.
Right.
So it worked out great for both reasons. Right. But yeah, I stayed home. I loved it. I was, you know, fortunate enough to be able to do it. And I think it's great. And I also am jealous a lot of my mommy friends that work.
Yeah.
It's both. Like, I love staying at home, but I also am the type of person that needs to get out and do things and have a life. Like, tonight I'm going out with my girlfriends and I have a nanny on Wednesdays and Fridays, and I made, my husband's out of town. I like botched up the hours of my nanny just so, like, I was like, come in the morning, I'm going to record a podcast. Then you could go home and then come back. She lives close to me. Mm-hmm. Then come back so I could go out at night because I have an event. And I'm like, you know, that was also important to me. So I was jealous of my mom friends who worked and got to speak to people all the time and got to, you know, communicate and go out to lunch and go pee and poop when they wanted to. And I commend moms who work, and I love that they work.
Yeah.
I just chose to stay at home for, you know, those reasons.
Do you think that you would ever consider going back to work?
The podcast is my work.
I mean, that's true.
So, like, yeah, I mean, look, my kids are 2 and 4. My daughter's going to start preschool. My son's in preschool. I am at a very good place in my life where if this podcast, for some reason, like, let's just say the podcast was a 9 to 5 right now, it will never be, but let's just say it was, I would gladly do it.
Right.
And I would get the coverage for, you know, the rest of the time or someone to pick up my kids because I love it so much. Like, I also like didn't love what I was doing.
Right.
So for me, like, thinking about, you know, not staying at home wasn't even an option. I was like, I don't even love what I'm doing right now. Podcast. I love the Mama Said podcast. I live and die for it. Like, it's so great for me. I would do it full time right now if I could.
If you could.
Yeah.
That's the nice thing about
it. And it is full time. Like, I'm constantly doing this, but, you know, it's like more at home. It's different. But if, you know, it had to be a 9 to 5 desk job, I would do it right now.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
One of the things she does mention, and I think we definitely should mention, is that the option to have a stay-at-home parent. She talks about how that really changes the data, because the kind of people who are able to have a stay-at-home parent often is a reflection of class, race, location.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think she also does a good job in this book of kind of calling that out. Like when she's looking at studies saying like the kind of person that this pertains to makes the makes them different than other kinds of people for whatever reason. And in her first book, I remember I listened to some of it and I remember her saying, talking about drinking while pregnant. And
what did she say?
You can have a drink every day.
Right.
She says you can have
a did she have a drink?
She did. She had a glass of wine almost every day, she said. But she talks about how the data basically is talking about binge drinking a lot. But the kind of person who's binge drinking, it turns out, is also doing cocaine.
Right. The dangerous.
The person who's binge drinking while pregnant is often doing cocaine. And she's like, that's a big difference than just having five glasses of wine.
Yeah.
Even though it's still binge drinking, you're also introducing a totally different substance.
Yes.
And so she kind of calls that out in this book also when there are different studies.
Researches.
Where she's like, this study's great, except for you have to look at – and like so for
– like you look at the big picture.
Big picture.
Yeah.
Like you can't have a stay-at-home parent if you are in a single-parent household.
Yeah.
So like that changes the data. Yeah. And that's going to change – a lot of things about how the kids are learn and are educated and what becomes important and how, you know, like some people in those situations become more driven. Like kids who come from single parent households, they often become entrepreneurs or they become more driven because of that. Or
absolutely.
Vice versa. Like there's kids where they don't have enough supervision and so then they fall into situations where they, you know, they figure out, you know, so but she at least
it's so situational, but
she acknowledges this, which I really appreciate, because I think sometimes in books where it's like they want to make a point, it doesn't feel like she has an agenda.
Yeah.
So she's like, okay, this is what I'm seeing in these
studies. Like the by the way, like I know the study says this, but like just so you know,
like, take it with a grain of salt because there's a certain socioeconomic group of people that have the ability to do that.
Yes.
And you know, and then there are people who have stay-at-home parents who also have full-time nannies. And like that's a totally different socioeconomic sphere.
That's a big topic amongst like mommy friends all the time.
Really?
Yeah.
What's the conversation?
It's more judgy, honestly. Sure. Like, because I think a lot of moms are jealous that they can't have that. I'm not going to lie. Like I've like looked down on it a couple times in my life, not anymore. But before I had kids, I would say, oh my God, like she doesn't work and she has a full-time nanny. Like what the hell? Like that's like, pay attention to your kid. Now that I have kids, I think differently.
Right.
But I think, but I'm being totally honest. Like I was judgy about that. I thought like that shouldn't, like that's not right.
Right.
And the truth is you can be a wonderful mother and not work and have a nanny too.
Yeah.
Because I have friends who are stay at home, who don't have a job and they have full-time nannies and they are wonderful moms.
Right.
So it is not, you know, they're, but it's just, every situation is different. Right. But yeah, like a lot of mom friends are always like, oh my God, like she has a full-time nanny. And, and I think a lot of it comes from jealousy.
Sure.
Like they might not have help. So like they look at someone who doesn't even need the help and they have it. So like F them.
Right. And then that, I mean, and then to bring it back to the book, that totally does skew the data about a stay-at-home parent, right?
Because like
the people who can afford to do that probably can afford other things for their kids and their education.
Totally.
And this and that. So totally. It's like, it's like all, none of this stuff in this book is in a vacuum. Like it's all kind of connected to the next thing.
Yes. Yes.
But I think I said this, I don't know if I said this last week or this week, but one of the things she says is that they found that the best performance in school comes from kids who have full-time parent and part-time parent working.
Oh.
So a full-time parent who works and a part-time parent who works. And I thought that was interesting. That.
Okay.
I think this is one of the things that she says that then later on it all evens out like by like seven.
Like that's perfect for me.
Yeah. So good for you. You're doing it right. Yeah. Congratulations.
Like, thank you very much.
She's talking.
How did I miss that part in the book?
I know, like pat myself on the back.
Seriously.
But I think, you know, I know my mom has said, and I've heard other people who have moms who were full-time, working full-time, that the way that they felt really good about the work that they were doing was like, I'm showing my daughter how to be a strong woman and like how to be, right. You know, and I think it was a different time, like in the 80s, that there was, women had something to prove in the workplace.
Yeah.
And I think now we still have a lot to prove, but I think it's different. And I think
more normal.
The focus on parenting, I think these things come in waves.
Yeah, totally.
And so I feel like now people are like, it's a badge of honor to be a stay-at-home parent in a way that our moms, I think you're around the same age as me, our moms probably like maybe would look down on that or think differently about it.
Right.
Like 20 or 30 years ago.
Right, right, right.
So it'll be interesting to see like what our kids think about our choices as moms.
Yes. It's so funny. Whenever I'm so proud to be doing this podcast or like working, whatever it would have been, like a podcast or whatever, I'm always really proud to talk about it with my kids because I feel like I finally have a job that I love.
Right.
And it's, I don't think I've ever had that besides me singing, which is like my true passion.
Right.
I feel like I wear that badge of honor and I'm like really excited. Like today I was like, okay, honey, I have to go because I'm recording a podcast and I've got to go. And it like makes me feel so good. And I hadn't had that feeling in so long. Like I said, I looked at my friends who worked and I really looked up to them. Like I was a stay-at-home mom and I was really proud to be a stay-at-home mom, but I also like half of me was just like, God, I think I'm a little jealous that, that they're like going out and like showing their kids that mommy's working and daddy's working. So, you know,
I think also some of that just has to do with being, sounds like you're fulfilled in what you're doing. And I think that showing your kids that is also important because I think that's ultimately like, what my
that's
mom
the ultimate
would say.
Goal.
Yeah. Like, it's not just that my mom was proud to go to work and like be a badass and kick ass at her job, but it was that she loved it and she was, my mom's super competitive like me.
Really?
So she was proud of being the best.
Yeah.
And like showing us like that women can be the best.
Yeah.
You know? And like it sounds like kind of what you're saying is you're proud of the work that you're doing. And so it doesn't, it doesn't matter if you're there 9 to 5 or you're there 30 minutes a month, like whatever it is.
Exactly,
That's what it takes to do a podcast, people.
In the studio, but 24, but literally 24/7. It's
crazy.
Yeah, I'm constantly doing this podcast. That's like another thing. Now I'm like always like, oh my God, I'm on my phone too much in front of my kids. Like maybe I do, you know, well, my daughter's going to start school soon, so it's going to free up a lot of my time. But right now I struggle with I'm doing all of this stuff for my podcast and my daughter sees me on the phone and it's a little, you know, I don't like it right now because she's just watching me, you know, communicate, but it'll change in January. But, that's a whole other thing. I don't even think she talks about that, like the phone thing.
She kind of talks about screen time for the
for
kids.
For a second,
she doesn't talk about parents on screen time.
Yeah, I was surprised that like that didn't make it in. It's probably her next book.
Well, also, so a lot of this book is evidence-based and she says the research just isn't in yet.
Right.
Like, it's just not, we haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah.
Because it's all so new and so the studies aren't in, they're not conclusive, they're small or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I did say to my husband, so we love sports. We watch so much sports.
Yeah.
It's like we met because of baseball.
Really?
Like
that's so cute.
Like a huge, huge sports family. And one of the, I've said two things to my husband now about sports and these babies. One is that I was like, I don't care who my babies sleep with. I don't care how they identify. I don't care any, whatever they want, I'm here. I can't wait.
Yeah.
It's going to be awesome. But if they don't like sports, I'm going to be so big mad.
Watch, they're not going to like sports.
I'm going to be big mad. Yeah. I'm going to be like, okay, cool. Well, then you can hang out with your dad.
But you know what? So whatever your dad did, like on Sundays, he brought, like, how cute is that? Like, that's probably why you were so into sports.
Yeah, so I'm going to force my kids to watch sports.
Absolutely.
But then the other thing, I'm reading the chapter about screen time for kids, and I turn to my husband, I'm like, do you think it counts if I'm watching a baseball game and the kids are in
the room?
Here's
what I'll have
I don't think that counts.
I'll tell you what I did. Like, I think babies, you know, when they're first born, so I was really strict about no screen time for my son until he was like 2. I didn't even wait till 3. Like 2 was when I really like let him sit in front of a TV. Sometimes before that, I would like turn it on while I took a shower, but then like would turn it off.
Right.
I felt like this tremendous guilt.
Right.
I don't know why. Like maybe it's because my mom said it's not good, doctor, whatever. I just felt this like weird guilt. And so I didn't do screen time a lot. My daughter, it's hard because my son now watches TV. Mm. I still feel this like weird guilt. So I only let her watch Daniel Tiger or Sesame Street. She's almost 2. And if that, it's like one episode and like turn it off. But when they were born, I do think like their eyes are so gentle.
Right.
I would turn them, if the TV was on in someone else's house or in our house, I would turn them because their eyes are, you know, new and they can't even focus on anything. So like, imagine seeing a TV. So like, that's all I would say. Like, I just don't think like newborn babies need to sit and stare at a screen.
I mean, I don't think newborn babies.
But a lot of people do just hold their baby and watch TV and their baby's like this in front of the screen. This is my personal preference. Right. And I don't think like that's good for their eyes. Yeah. I just don't.
Right. No, that makes sense. I'm thinking more like, because she talks about like educational television.
Yeah.
She's talking about and you letting can't even, your kid watch TV.
But they don't know anything until age of three, I think she said, or two.
It was like between two and three. Yeah. It was like kind of the soft spot of like maybe they're learning, but probably not. And then like three and four, they could learn from TV.
Yeah. They can remember songs and stuff, but they're probably not like really being like, ABC, that sells, you know, and red shape. I mean,
so I'm like, can me having sports on like be okay?
It's, and then I was going to say also like, of course it's okay.
Right.
Like, of course it's okay.
Just radio. So
yeah, but like my point being like, yes, like they can sit with you and watch sports. Like you're not like parking them in front of like the TV by themselves for 2.5 hours.
Right.
I think everything in moderation is fine.
No, of course. But it was like, those were
I know.
Because I'm like, there's not enough conclusive evidence for
I know.
An answer here.
I know. Well, you could bend the rules for anything you want that makes you happy.
Take them to sporting events. It's fine. I'm just like, that's the one thing. I don't mind not watching TV. I'm like, whatever. But the sports, like, because they're going to be born during the NFL playoffs.
Let them hear it. Let them listen to it.
They will.
Yeah.
I mean, they will. Or I'll just, you know, we'll just figure out. They can be – I don't need them watching, but I need to be watching.
Yeah, but like my whole point – my point was like, of course they can watch. Like just – I was just like when they're like newborns.
When they're little.
Like,
no, I've heard a lot of people say that because it's not – can't possibly be good even for our eyes.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine it's good for someone's eyes who like can't even focus more than
exactly.
9 inches in front of their face. Like,
it's just too much going on with them. It's you know, overstimulation.
There was one other fact in the book that shook me to my core. 5% of babies never crawl. They just go from sitting to walking.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Isn't that weird?
I was like, am I reading this wrong? It was such a minor part of the book, but I was like,
it's funny. It's a minor part of the book, but like I actually, and this is what I've read. It's actually like, that's not great to
For.
Yeah. What I've heard is it's not like if it's happened to you and your kid is normal, like that's because like I'm probably wrong. But like I've heard like developmentally, like you really want your kid to crawl.
Interesting.
Yeah. Like if you don't, like they're fine. I know some of my friends like were like, I never crawled and they are perfectly fine human beings. But I think like in the developmental world, you want to try to let your kids crawl. It's like a huge, developmental milestone that is good for them.
I just had never heard of not crawling. So I was like, I didn't know this was a thing.
So funny,
I had no idea.
I actually, my daughter rolled really early on, but then just didn't after that. And I brought her to the specialist in LA because I was just like, you know, I want her to be developmentally, you know, on track. And I feel like she should be rolling at this point. She did. And then she stopped. And the woman said something really interesting. She was like, look, like, we could teach them how to do things. They don't have to just like all of a sudden be like, and one day I can crawl and one day I can walk. Like you can actually teach them like you do talking. Like when you're talking to your kid, you're saying A, B, C, A, B, C. And then eventually they'll say A, B, C. You know what I mean? Like you're teaching them their brain. It's the same for movement. Like you're teaching them. So you can actually teach them movements, like how to crawl, the steps to turn. So I did that. I worked with her and it like fully works. Their brain is remembering movements on how to tuck their legs into their chest to turn. And I did this repetitively over and over again with my daughter until, you know, a couple weeks later, she was turning and rolling. And I just, it was really interesting.
That's so interesting because I just always think that babies just figure it out on their own.
And they usually do, but sometimes they need a little push.
Right. Well, you teach your kids
everything else. And she was telling me it's really important for them to hit these milestones of turning. Like, let's not skip it. Let's like focus on letting them actually like make them.
Right. And she talks a lot about milestones, physical and verbal in this book, which I thought that part was really interesting.
And that was an important chapter for me because I'm going through that right now where my daughter, who's almost two, knows a lot of words, but my son at her age was talking in sentences.
Right.
So like while it's hard not to compare, like I'm also not worried, but I really was interested in that one chapter.
Yeah. She explains why it's important.
Yeah.
And like what the milestones are and kind of like why they matter.
Yeah.
And I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
I don't think we always understand why or where milestones come from.
Yeah. Milestones is a tricky one. It's a really like, it brings on a lot of anxiety for moms, a lot. I remember at Mommy and Me, oh my gosh, like moms would listen to my son talk. It's funny because like the tables are turned. Like now I'm doing the same thing with my daughter.
Right.
They would be like, well, Milo's doing this. Milo's talking and my son doesn't say anything. Oh my God. Like, should I take him to a speech therapist? Does he have autism? Like, it's really scary for moms and milestones. Like, you should just listen to ask your pediatrician. Like with that, I would say like, don't like get those emails where like this month you're getting a milestone email because it's going to freak you the fuck out.
Right.
If your son or daughter didn't hit it.
Well, everyone's different and we develop in different ways and some people develop physically first and, and verbally.
Yeah.
First.
Yeah.
That stuff I'm less stressed out about now. But I'm
but now, but like it's different when you're actually when you're like you're going to Mommy Me class and everyone's walking for 2 months and your kid isn't.
Right.
Doesn't mean anything's wrong. No. You ask, she said like her daughter didn't walk. And then at 15 months, she like went to her Dr. Lee and she was like, what the fuck? Like what's going on? 2 weeks later, her daughter started walking while this other kid was walking at 12 months, you know, but you know, you have to ask your pediatrician. They're the ones who are going to tell you like, this is when we have to start to worry. Don't read like the email that you're getting on your app or whatever.
Well, I've learned that also from the pregnancy apps.
Those are so
I'm like, okay, first of all, I don't know how my kid could be the size of a zucchini, but also be the size of a cabbage. I'm very confused.
Yeah.
But also I'll always ask my husband, I'm like, is this true? And he's like, oh. Or like, yeah, kind of.
Yeah, like, it's just like really. So generalized, I'm sure.
It's so general. And like, I go to the doctor every 2 weeks. So I actually know how much my baby's weighing pretty much every time I go for less. And then I get the thing and it's like, my baby's a pound more than what you're saying.
I know. It's always like a little funky. But yeah, like that's another piece of advice. Like just like don't like ask people who you trust, like your pediatrician, like especially about milestones. Like that's a topic that could really like spiral you into like a dark space.
Well, it sounds just like some of your most like consistent advice is just find the people, stay with the people that you trust, like surround yourself with you. And I think that that's true probably for all parts
of life in general.
Like,
yeah.
Find the people that speak to you and help you and that hear you and trust you and that you trust and then just do that.
Yeah.
And I think that's right.
Yeah.
Probably for everything.
For sure.
Okay. The last thing we always talk about for every book is the title and the cover.
Mm.
So this book is bright yellow. It's called Crib Sheet, A Data-Driven Guide to Better, More Relaxed Parenting from Birth to Preschool. If you're not looking at the book right now, the cover is a crib, but inside
data.
The crib is a graph.
Yeah.
And then up above, there's a mobile that's got like shapes on it.
Yeah.
What do you think of the title and the cover?
Very catchy.
Yeah.
It's spot on. It does the trick. It's, you know, it's exactly what she's talking about. It's like something as simple as a crib sheet, but with a lot of fucking data with it.
Totally. I mean, I feel like oftentimes when we talk about titles and covers, like one of the biggest things that irritates me is when I don't feel like the book is packaged for what it is.
Mm.
And this book is packaged for exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Like I got this book. It came. I opened it. There was no surprises. For
no.
Me. Besides the fact that it was more readable than I thought it might be.
Right? She was funny.
Yeah.
She's funny.
Yeah.
I mean, she's like, you know.
Yeah. I think
relatable.
She's totally relatable. The book is really exactly what it claims to be, which I always appreciate because I read so many books and I'm like, why are you trying to trick me?
Yeah.
I hate being tricked.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hate magic because I don't like to be tricked.
Yes.
I'm like, I want to know what I'm getting. And this book looks like what it is, which I appreciate.
No, she,
and the
she was
only
great.
Thing, I think the only thing I didn't love about the book was I just felt like the second half of the book, because so much of it was like
about,
well, it was just, there wasn't data that said conclusively one way or the other.
Right.
So I just kind of felt like at the end, I was like, okay, so basically all of this is just my opinion.
Oh, that's what I loved about the book. That's so funny.
Well, I think also that's because that's where you are parenting.
Yeah.
Like you're in the
preschool. You're like searching for more answers.
Yeah, because like, I'm in the phase where I'm like, do I need to breastfeed?
Like, yeah, it's
do
like I loved that I was reading this and I was like, been there, done that, been there, done that.
Totally. Because like in her first book, the beginning part is like all about conceiving.
Yes.
And I just skipped that whole section. I was like, did it, done.
Yeah.
But like, so for me, the second half, I was like, I think I'll probably revisit this book later on when my kids are older. And I'll probably have different feelings about the second half because it'll pertain to me and I'll want permission to make my own choices.
Yes.
Whereas in the first half, I was like, tell me what to do. Like, tell me about coasting.
But you can kind of hear by the way she writes, like, I feel like there's like an underlying way of like her telling you what she,
for sure. 100%.
And that's why I was saying, like, I did everything that she did, kind of. Like, I was like, it just, I could tell, like, she was like,
so it's like validating.
Like, without her saying it, it was like, but this is what you should do.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally. Totally. Well, Jenna, do you have anything else you want to throw in about this book before we get out of here?
No, we just need her on the podcast. We need Emily Oster on the podcast right now, and then we'll drink wine at the same time.
Let's talk in depth about screen time, specifically sports, Emily.
That's her next book. I bet you she's writing it right now.
It's called, like, Sports. For Tracy. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. She's writing personalized books for everyone.
For everybody who has questions.
Yes.
Well, Jenna, thank you so much for being here. You guys can catch Jenna on the Mama Said podcast. I will link to that and all of Jenna's social in the show notes. But thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm so happy for you.
Yay.
Well, and your hubby.
We'll see how I'm feeling when this episode actually comes out into the world.
Can't wait.
But you guys, we will see you in the stacks. That does it for us today. Thank you so much for listening. And thank you to Jenna Paris for being our guest. Make sure to check Jenna out on the Mama Said podcast on the Lady Gang Network. I'd also like to say thank you to the folks over at Penguin Press for sending over a copy of Crib Sheet by Emily Oster. You can find everything we discussed on today's episode in the link in the show notes. Make sure to get your book recommendation read on air by sending us an email at askingthestacks@gmail.com. For more from The Stacks, please follow us on social media at The Stacks Pod on Instagram and at The Stacks Pod _ on Twitter, and check out our website, thestackspodcast.com. To join the Stacks Pack and get inside access to this show, head to patreon.com/thestacks. Thanks to Audible, listeners of this podcast get a free 30-day trial and a free audiobook download by going to audibletrial.com/thestacks. Make sure you are subscribed to this show wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're listening through Apple Podcasts, please take a moment to rate and review the show. Our graphic designer is Robin McCrite, and our theme music is from Tegirigis. This show was created and produced by me, Tracy Thomas.